Okay, it's 8:31, Rabbi Kelman. Shall I begin?
Yes, we can begin.
Okay, a few things. As always, I showed you last class a picture of the kever of the grave of Rabbi Shimon Oppenheim, and I said it's the only example I know of where someone says, "Come to my kever, and your prayers will be heard." Well, Rabbi Mordechai from Brooklyn points out that there's someone else. It's very similar. I don't know if anyone recognizes the person we're looking at. His name is Rav Sholem Moskovitz, the Shatzer Rebbe of London. You can read about him here. And it actually says that he left an ethical will specifying that anyone coming to his grave and can ask for his help. And he says that he will attempt to intercede in heaven if you come to his grave, and etc. Ruvain from Paris. I wanted to tell you, well, there's one more thing about Talmud Chacham I wanted to tell you. He asked me a number of questions about the word Talmud Chacham. So I forgot to mention this. In the Tishbi, do you know what, I don't know if you guys know what the Tishbi is. The Tishbi is it's Eliyahu Levita. He wrote a number of works, including a grammatical work. He wrote the Tishbi and other things, Masoras Yagot Torah. He has, under Talmud Chacham, he asks, why do we call a sage a Talmud Chacham? Why don't we just call him a Chacham? The Gemara is full of examples, Talmud Chacham. And he says something interesting for you, Reuven, and everyone else. He says that, well, first of all, he asked a lot about this. And they told him, of course, it's smichut, Talmud Chacham, student of the wise. But he said other people explained it as a Talmud, a student who became wise, which clearly isn't correct, because if you look at the plural, it's Talmidei Chachamim. It's not Talmidim Chachamim. But he says as follows. He has a theory. He says, just like originally in Greece, they used to refer to the wise men as sophos. Wise. Later they thought, he claims this is the reason, I don't know if it is, that this was thought to be gaiva. So instead of calling them wise men, they called them philosoph, lovers of wisdom. And he says the same thing happened. It was considered gaiva to refer to them as chacham. They didn't want to be called that. So instead, for modesty, they called themselves students of the wise, talmid chacham. Maybe. The end of last class, we were dealing with the Yated Naaman. And if the word Yated is feminine, as it is, why does it refer to as Yated Naaman, the newspaper? So Baruch called my attention to the Wikipedia in Hebrew, which says that because of the Pasuk. They picked this pasuk, Chaf Beis, Chaf Gimel, where it says in Yeshaya, Utkaativ Yated Bimakom Neaman. I will fasten him as a peg in a short place. Maybe. But I said that it's strange. I said it's strange, but I also said, I think there's one place where it is masculine. It turns out I was wrong. The pasuk I remembered is as follows. I'll show you why I was wrong, too. If you look in Yeshaya, chapter 33, took me a while to find this number, verse 20, it says as follows. In verse 20, it says, Ohel Baltzion, Bal Yisa Yetedotav Lanetzach. So Ohel Baltzion means a tent shall not be removed. Then it says, Bal Yisa Yetedotav Lanetzach, which the translation is the stakes whereof shall never be plucked up. So I recalled it here. It should say, if it's talking, first of all, it should be plural, but I remembered this as being masculine, but it's really not. You have to put in, I looked in Nidas Mikra, you have to put in a man, like Bal Yisa Adam, because it's singular. So I can't find any examples of the word Yated that it appears as feminine. Sorry, that it appears as masculine. I mentioned also, so I had a correspondence with one of you about the word merkaz, because I quoted that Ibn Tibbon in the back of the Mor Nevuchim. He says as follows about the word merkaz. Mila aravit hetaknuha el lishonenu letzarchenu ela. That we transferred it to our language for our purposes. However, when I looked in the Ben Yehuda dictionary, lo and behold, his father, Yehuda ben Tibon, whose picture I showed you, he already shows, he already has this word. And he mentions one other source. So we can't say that Shmuel ibn Tibon invented it. He transferred it, but his father used it earlier. Two more points. Over Shabbos, I was reading this book. I just got it, although from the library, although it's already a few years old. David Lichtenstein, he's very good. Both his classes, not his classes, his Saturday night things, although it's about halacha, it's supposed to be about halacha, very little of it these days has to do with halacha. But this book, because we spoke about the sherry casks and Ramosha's Heter, the blended whiskey, he has a whole article on this. And he does something, everyone's arguing back and forth, and he says, I guess he could do it, he could pay for it. He goes, let's send these whiskeys out to a laboratory and find out how much taste is actually in there. How much of the wine from the casks is in there. And you can read this, this is on page 449. The amount is tiny. It's not just less than a 60th. It's less than even 600th. And he concludes, not that he's a posek, but he concludes, in light of these considerations, it seems clear that there is room to allow sherry cask scotch without any concern. And he goes on. So if you're interested in the topic, check it out. And finally, this book. I mentioned, this is a very expensive book. This might be the most expensive book I have, if it's still that expensive. I've never been one to buy rare books. I have lots of books. If I could pick up this camera, I'd show you. But reprints. And I stopped buying so many of the old stuff when we have Otzar Chachma HebrewBooks.org. As far as I'm concerned, I just want the content. I'm not a collector. This book, however, at least when it went on auction about 7-8 years ago, it got up to almost $1,000. I even got it by accident. I ordered it for my university library. I thought it was going to be like a hagiographical type of book. And when it came in, the books are given to me first. I look at them and then we give them to the library. As soon as I saw it, and I saw this on the cover, and you know what this is over here? This is Rabbi Achiyak of Weinberg, taken from the cover of my book, without asking, by the way. The first thing he ever said to me when I spoke to him was he apologized for using the picture without asking my permission. Really, I don't have the copyright. It comes from University of Gießen. Incidentally, here is, just so you know, one day I'm going to do a blog post and I'll identify all the people on the picture here, because he doesn't tell you. But this is Rav Aaron Cutler. Can you see Rav Aaron there? Yeah. Looking very differently than he did in his later years. So I'll identify who all these people are one day on the front cover. But so when I saw the book and then I start looking at it, I'm like, I have to keep this. So I decided to buy the book from Bigoisen. And one of the first things I did is that I sent an email to a friend of mine. I sat there for like an hour going through it and said, are they going to put him in Cheirim for this, or is Chus Avos, the merit of his forefathers his father, I should say, going to protect him? And my friend, who's part of that world, said, no, he'll be protected. But he wasn't. I have an essay, actually, a long essay on which is supposed to be coming out soon on Ernesto Kamenetsky. Now, so why am I mentioning this? Because I said last class that he was put in Cheirim. Now, he always regarded himself as being put in Cheirim. But technically, when I listened to it, I realized I said that the book was put in Cheirim. He was not put in Cheirim. Although if there was a call from a Michal, what's his name again? Michal Yehuda Lefkowitz, to put him in Cheirim. But he never was. Now, while I'm speaking to you about this, I can show you this book. I don't know if any of you have seen this book. This book you couldn't get. Anatomy of a Band. This came out within a year of Making of a Gadol. It's his personal description of everything that happened. This was never sold in the stores. This was only given in person when you came to him, if he chose to give it to you. Here you could see where it says here. Let's see. I don't know how well you can read it. Given by the author to Dr. Mark Shapiro, and gives the date December 24th. Oh, I wasn't. Hold on. I got to show you this. I wasn't even showing you. Hold on. Oh, yeah, I was showing you, yeah. December 24th, 2003. Anatomy of a Band. Now, he asked me, what to do with this book, because he didn't want to be put in, he didn't want it to be put in a cheirim, and he personally didn't want to be put in a cheirim. He's different than the other Nusson, Nusson Slifkin. Nusson Slifkin, when his books are put in a cheirim, he responded, and that meant he had to leave that world. Nusson Kamenetsky wanted to remain in that world, so he couldn't publicly go against it, but privately he did. I told him he should give it to the National Library in Jerusalem and keep it closed for 25 years and then open it up to everyone. And he said he was going to do that, but I just checked this morning and apparently he didn't do that, because at least if the website is correct, anyone can see this book. You could just go to the National Library and order it. And the idea that he said he agreed with me, keeping it embargoed for 25 years, you know what? I take that hit. Maybe the agreement was 25 years or upon his passing. And that's why now you could see it, because he specifically told me it would be, he liked that idea. But anyone who's interested in reading Anatomy of a Band, you can read that. So, okay, friends, we are here now. This is the 40th class. I feel like we've been together, it's a long time, and we've done great things. I'm going away for Pesach. And one of the talks in America, we can do that to many of us. One of the talks is the making of my latest book, A 30-Year Story. But that's in 45 minutes. So to do it in 45 minutes, you've got it, and just count up the hours now. We're 40 hours and going strong. So I calculate another 15 classes. But we have, as always, we got interesting stuff, unusual stuff, great stuff today. I want to pick up, however, right in the middle. We're in the middle of Siman Kuf Mem Aleph, right at the end. Siman Kuf Mem Aleph ends in on page 302. There were a couple points to finish off the tshuva. The one thing I forgot to mention, which I wanted to come back to in the tshuva, about the word maskil. We spoke about maskil, and we saw that Rabbi Mazuz said, and we're going to focus again. This will also be on Rabbi Mazuz. And thank you, Naftali. He sent me from Yeshiva World News that Rabbi Mazuz made even the English language Haredi news today, or was it yesterday, because he ordered that in all of his kolels, he has a bunch of kolels, everyone needs to be vaccinated. So not such a chiddush, but they wanted to report it. The word maskil. So we saw that Rabbi Mazuz says that in the Sephardic world, maskil is not a negative thing. And we quoted examples from the Psukim. Now, let me show you something really interesting, I think, or some of you might find it interesting, that was pointed out by a real maskil, namely Yitzhak Ber Levinson. He wrote to W. Israel and many other works. He pointed out as follows, that it's very strange that the Zohar, here's the first page of the Zohar. He said, really, the Zohar should be called Maskilim or Maskil. Why? Because right at the beginning, it has the Pasuk that we saw, HaMaskilim Yaziru Kazoah Harakia. And we have Midrashim are done this way. And also look at the Bahir. Hold on, here's the Bahir. The Bahir begins. I'm Rav Nechunya ben Akana. Then it says, it quotes the Pasuk. Lo ra'u or Bahir. So it didn't, where is this? It's Eov. Hold on. Where's the Pasuk in Eov? I'll show you the Pasuk. The Bahir quotes. It's Eov 37:21. Here you go. Lo ra'u or Bahiru Bashachakim. So that's why they call it the Bahir. So really, he said the Zohar should be called Hamaskilim, Hamaskil, or something. But he explains that the idea Zohar, brightness, shining. And even to this day, the Sfarim, they're called Torah, Or, Meir, all these things. So that's why it broke with what you'd expect to call it from the Pasuk. Incidentally, what you're looking at in the Zohar here is a Breishis. But this is not the beginning of the Zohar. The Zohar has a Hakdama, an introduction. And if you look in the Besamim Rosh, right at the beginning of Besamim Rosh, he just alludes to it, that, believe it or not, Yaakov Emden doesn't mention this, that he says that, well, we know that Tanaitic works never have introductions. There's no Hakdama. So he sort of says this is, he doesn't sort of, he says this is a proof to what my relative Yaakov Emden said, that at least this part couldn't be medieval. Okay, the last two things I wanted to call your attention to in the tshuva is in my literature of Mazuz, I mentioned two things in a note that he replied to. And that's, remember we were speaking about maskilim, and I said, well, in Lithuania, a maskil is one who is interested in history and diktuk, but you're still a religious Jew. And I gave the example of Matisyahu Strashen, and I said, even perhaps Rav Shmuel Strashen, the famous Rashash, who's, I just heard a shiur from Rav Schechter. Rav Schechter says something interesting. He said, today, no one learns Marsha, but they all love the Rashash, and everyone loves Rashash. I love Rashash. Whenever I learn Gemara, I like to look in the back because he always has interesting things. But the Rashash says something. Well, let me show you what he says. Here, let me pull it out for a second here. Where is my Gemara here? I have a page. Ah, here it is. The Gemara says as follows in Bava Metzia. And this is found in all your Gemaras. As far as I know, they haven't removed it. At least they haven't removed the Rashash. Here's the Gemara. It says, well, I'll read the English here. This is 107a. It says, blessed shall you be when you enter and blessed shall you be when you exit. Baruch atah bavlecha, baruch atah b'tzesecha. What does it mean? Your exit from the world should be just like your entry into the world. What is that? Just like your entry, your entry to the world is without sin. So too, the saying, blessed are you when you enter, blessed when you exit, just as you enter without sin, so too your exit should be without sin. Well, the Rashash says as follows, if you look at his commentary, Mikan stira katsat, labale dasa gilgo. He says, this appears to be a little bit of a contradiction to the people who hold the notion of reincarnation. Now he says ktsas because what does it say? It says just like you came in without sin, so too you leave without sin. Because really the people who believe in Gilgal, reincarnation, they don't say that you actually have a sin upon you. What they say is that you come back to this earth on account of a sin in a previous lifetime. So that's why he's saying ktsas, but he still is expressing, it's clear that he doesn't believe it's a dogmatic thing. Now, this idea of Gilgal, reincarnation, I think most people in our circles, if you're not a Mekubal, you look at it as a little strange, but it shouldn't be strange. First of all, it's a belief held on the entire, in India, for instance, and not just in all the religions that come from India. You have Buddhism. Buddhism comes from India, incidentally. Long before it came to China and Japan, it was in India. It was in India for a very long time. And it's only come back in the 20th century, really, in any numbers, because the Dalai Lama comes to Dharamshala when he escapes from China. Also the Karmapa Lama. But that's right near, right there in the north, Dharamshala. The Chabad has like the biggest Seder of the year. They have you there or Kathmandu. It's an incredible place if you can ever go there. Believe it or not, I flew there. I went there in 2017. Lo and behold, I mean, you think that wherever you never meet a Jew, at least an identifying Jew there. Lo and behold, I'm staying in a hotel. There's a thing called Kivunim. It's very expensive, and non-Orthodox kids, or mostly non-Orthodox, they travel the world. They were in my little hotel, but more than that, right near Dharamshala, there's a village that's only open in the, not in the, like from like after Pesach, April, I guess, until October. There's Hebrew writing everywhere. It becomes a complete Israeli village. And there's a Chabad house there too, that looks just like 770. The Chabad would know where to go. They're all set up there. But so Gilgal was found. The Jains have Gilgal, the Hindus, obviously, the reincarnation. And in Judaism, we have it also. It's not just in Judaism. This is an essential feature for Mekubalim. They think it is a basic belief. Now, it's true. Rasadya Gong rejected it. Many others rejected it. So it's a machlokas. But to say that it's not a Jewish belief, it is. It's definitely a Jewish belief. But the Rashash says that at least it appears that the Talmud doesn't hold of it. Incidentally, Rav Elio ben Amozig, he explained the passage, you know, the idea that Eliyahu was Pinchas, which I don't know what it means originally. I don't think it means literally. Maybe he had the traits or something. But Eliyahu ben Amozig, who we had classes on, you can go to the Old Torah in Motion, he claims that this is Gilgal. that's what the, and when the Gemara identifies different people, this is a trait in the Gemara or Midrash. You might've noticed it. It's I call it the conservation of personalities, that you always have one person and the Midrash says, it says just an Esther. What do they say? Charbona, is that what they say? Maybe it's in the Targum Sheni, he says it's really Daniel. I mean, they always have all these identifications where people, they have one name, but they mean someone else. And Eliyahu ben Amozig thinks this is referring to Gilgal. That when it says that this person is really this person, or you see this a lot in Midrash, I don't think it's referring to Gilgal, but that's what he says. So I said to Rabbi Mazuz that Rav Chaim Kanievsky, genius of genius, well, in terms of knowledge, content, I don't know in terms of coming up with new conceptions or things like that, like a Soloveitchik type genius, but photographic memory like no one else we have today. He claims that the Rashash couldn't have written this because the Rashash isn't a muscule. It had to be his son, Rav Mitzvah Strashen. He must have put it in there because we know he's a muscle and therefore not so kosher. He forged it in the name of his father. So I write to my Rabbi Mazuz. First of all, this makes no sense. Leaving apart the fact that the Rashash was, from a Lithuanian perspective, you look at him as somewhat of a muscle also, but this was published in the Rashash's lifetime. The Rashash, he put it out in his lifetime. Forgetting the fact that the Mentishah Strashen will never say something in forge something in the name of his father. The Rashash, this was published in his lifetime. So it clearly can't be true. And Rabbi Mazuz agrees with me and doesn't make any sense. But then I say as follows about Gilgal. Rav Yehuda Mudna, Leon Mudna, the rabbi of Venice. We've spoken about him a number of times. Those who came with me to Italy remember. Although he was one of the Rabbanim in Venice, he has Shelos and Chuvos, he was a bit of a strange character. He was a gambler. He wrote an autobiography. We know that people who write autobiographies are unusual. We spoke of Yaakov Emden and the Aderes and the Baruch Epstein, the Torah Tamima, and Mudna. And Mudna tells about how he was addicted to gambling. He had like 24 different jobs. He gives us all the stuff. And the Chidah says as follows. The Chidah claims, well, it's not claims. He does. If he says it, he did. The Chidah was very medactic on things. The Chidah tells us that he saw a manuscript of Mudna where there was a little child who was sick. 6 months old, the child was deathly ill. So Rabbi Mudna came to do psukim. Incidentally, Yom Kippur Katan, there's a piyut that is said by Hasidim and others. It's by Mudna. He came to read psukim to him when his person was about to die, the little baby. And he said the psukim, and suddenly the little child opened his eyes and said, Shema Yisrael, the six-month-old child. And then the child died. And then the text says, see, Mudna was he rejected Kabbalah, he rejected Gilgal, all this stuff. So the manuscript from Mudna says that from that point on, he believed in reincarnation because he saw with his own eyes how a six-month-old child, mouth started to move and sing a Shema. So the Chidah, Chaim Yosef Razoi. So I say to Rabbi Mazuz, there's no doubt that this, that never happened. Lo hayav lo nivra. It never happened. It's simply someone who copied this text of Mudna, added it in. And I said, this is just like we have these legends about the Rambam. You might have heard the Migdal Oz, incidentally, the Mishnah Torah quotes it, that at the end of his life, the Rambam, he discovered Kabbalah and he rejected everything that he wrote in philosophy. We know these are things that are not true. These are just things made up. And I said the same thing about Mudna, to which Rabbi Mazuz replied that he, with Ne'eman Aleinu Achidah, we should believe that what the Chidah says, that he saw it in a manuscript, unless you say that it wasn't an actual manuscript of Mudna, but a copy. And that's clearly the case, that this is one of these things made up. There's no doubt. Okay, with that, we end Sima Kuf Mem Aleph. Now we're in Kuf Mem Beis, page 303. And this is the other long letter of mine to Rabbi Mazuz. After this letter, we have two smaller things from Rabbi Mazuz, and then we go into other people we've spoken about, including, as I said, we're going to get to Rav Schechter. But this has a lot of good stuff in it. So I'm just going to skip over some of the things. Otherwise, we could spend three classes on it. Okay, I'll start with number two in my letter. As you know, I save up lots of comments, and then I'll send like 15 or 10. Incidentally, one of you asked me. I see. I forgot because we spoke about the Yachad Party. What did the Yachad Party say about women? Can women be elected? And it's an interesting question because they were asked this during the election. Rabbi Mazuz said that we will not be the first Haredi party to have women serve. That is, he said, it's technically not forbidden, but we're not going to be the first ones. Now, you might be thinking, why call them a Haredi party? Because as I explained, the Yachad Party was a combination of the Chardalim, the right-wing religious Zionists, and this so-called moderate Haredim. But the truth is that the Chardalim, they are Haredi when it comes to these matters of Tzniut. But that's what Rabbi Mazuz said, that technically it's permissible, but we will not be the first Haredi party to have a woman deputy. He's actually more liberal than Rabbi Avinair, because Rabbi Avinair, who was one of the people supporting the Yachad Party, he doesn't believe at all that women should be, he thinks it's forbidden. So, I have another long letter. Let's tell you one more thing about these letters. I have a friend who's also been corresponding with Rabbi Mazuz for a long time. And he thought it's interesting because that I get back these long letters as well, because we know that today that there are many people who write and most of them don't get replies. How can you, if you're getting 10, 15 letters a day, how can you reply? Others get replies from, there's some of the yeshiva students. How is it that I get these replies? And I get long replies. My friend gets replies because he too has been writing for many years, but they're very short. And I think the answer is as follows. My friend agreed with me that it's because most of the letters coming in, including my friend, deal with halacha, Gemara. I'm writing about, as you see, all these unusual things. And he likes these unusual things. He finds them interesting. So I really think that that's the reason I get these letters, is because I'm focusing on matters that are of interest to him, but are sort of off the beaten track. I'm not writing chidushim, which I'm not capable of writing of a level of chidushim to be mefalpel with one of the Gedolei Yisrael. But certainly I can write about these unusual things, and maybe that's at least why I think I'm zoche, as we can say, to these long, very interesting letters. Okay, so in Simon Kuf Membeis, the first thing I want to speak about, I ask, is as follows. We just had a fast day, Tiny Sester. Do women need to fast on this? Do women need to fast on any of these fast days other than Tisha B'Av and Yom Kippur? And this is a dispute, I should say. I think I should say. Among the Hasidim, what I'm told basically is that the women do not fast. Among the Litvish, many of the women do, many of them don't. Rav Akiva Yosef Schlesinger, the famous Lev Ivri, he writes that he has a tradition that from the Chasam Sofer that pregnant and nursing women should only fast on Yom Kippur. And even if women who aren't pregnant, they should only fast on Tisha B'Av and the other fast days if they're very healthy. So we see a downgrading of it already there. I have many other sources that, let me just give you some examples. So for instance, and this is what Rav Mazuz is going to be responding to, that the Darchei Tshuva, Sefer Shapiro, famous Darchei Tshuva, he writes as follows that, I think I wrote it down here. Here I have it here. He says as follows in his Tshuvos, that he quotes the Shinova Rebbe, Recheska of Shinova, who says he got this from the earlier Gedolim, that any woman of childbearing age, and if it's difficult for her to fast, better that she doesn't fast. Only when she's no longer of childbearing age, if she's healthy, then she could fast. And there's other sources as well that speak about not fasting, and therefore it's become common practice. In fact, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, who's not Hasidic, This is what he's quoted as follows in the Halicha Shlomo was saying, that the minhag in our place, namely in Jerusalem, Hayash Hanashim Einan Misanos Kol, women do not fast at all. V'afanaros, even the young unmarried women. Milvad Tisha B'Av Yom Kippurim. So here we see Rosh Shlomo Zalman Auerbach saying that in Jerusalem, minhag Jerusalem of the Ashkenazim, is that other than Tisha B'Av and Yom Kippur, the women do not fast at all on any of these other fast days. So therefore, it's hard, I would say, to criticize women for not fasting on these days if the great Rosh Shlomo Zalman Auerbach said that that's the minhag. Well, Rav Mazuz does criticize them because I don't know if he knew Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, but he says as follows. He quotes, firstly, he quotes Rav Ovadia Yosef, who quoted Darchei Tshuva. And what does Rav Ovadia Yosef say? It's against Chazal. It's against the Talmud. It's against all the poskim. All the poskim say women have to fast as well. If they're ill, or if they're pregnant, then they don't have to. But a simple woman who's not pregnant, who says she doesn't have to fast? And Rabbi Mazuz says, based on this, that he says, Rov Hamoros Valtalmidos Bebeis Yaakov B'Yameinu, he says, most, I don't know if this applies to America, most of the teachers and the students at Beis Yaakov do not fast on these days. And as if they didn't have, as if the fast days don't exist. And he refers to, he says, the Dalet Tanios, which I say clearly doesn't mean, I write to him, it doesn't mean, most of the time when we say the four fast days, what are we referring to? We're referring to Tzom Gedalia, Asar B'Teves, Shiva Asar B'Tammuz, and Tisha B'Av, because Tani Sester technically is a minog. But clearly he wasn't referring to that, as we'll see. So that's the first thing I wrote to him about. And he replies, it's correct what I said, that he's not referring to Tisha B'Av. But this is interesting. So you here might be an example of where the religious Zionist community might be more, is clearly more machped than the Hasidic world on this. The next question I asked him was as follows. The Gemara says in Sukkah. Let me show you Gemara here. Do I have it here in Sukkah? I thought I, no. So I'll tell you, I have the Shulchan Aruch. The Gemara has a dispute. Hold on. Oh, Gemara has a dispute. Why do we eat in the Sukkah? We'll get back to this in a second. Why do we eat in the Sukkah? The dispute, two opinions. It's in Sukkah, Yud Aleph Amud Beis. Rabbi Ezra says we eat in the Sukkah because of the Anani HaKavod, the clouds that protected the Jewish people. And Rabbi Akiva says we eat in the Sukkah to commemorate the actual dwelling in booths. If you take a look at what the Shulchan Aruch says, Shulchan Aruch says as follows. This is in Hirosukah, Tafrei Shchafei. Basukah Teshu Shivas Yamim. Why? It says Basukah Shafti is Ben Israel. Hey, Manane HaKavod. So Rabbi Yosef Karo in the Shulchan Aruch says that why do we dwell in the Sukkah? It's the Anane HaKavod. I wrote to Rabbi Mazuz because in one of his pieces, he uses the language that the Shulchan Aruch Pasak decided halachically that the reason we eat in the Sukkah is because of the Anane HaKavod. So I wrote, what do you mean Pasak? What does this have to do with halacha? The Shulchan Aruch is giving you an opinion. There's nothing halacha. Halacha means you have to do something. What does this have to do with halacha? The Gemara uses an expression about something like this. My dehave have. What happened, happened. Whether it was, we don't know. Well, you can't paskin what the reason is. So he writes to me and says, you're right. That's not, you're right. You can't use the language. I guess he's saying I shouldn't have used language sock, but it still is relevant. Because when you're in the sukkah, I guess this is more of maybe a Kabbalistic thing, you're supposed to lechavein that it's lezecher ananei kavod. You're supposed to have in mind that it's lezecher ananei kavod. Okay, a small thing. Next thing's a bigger thing, I think. Oh, actually, before we even get to that, Rabbi Mazuz has many times spoken about that you need to speak about emunah philosophical things. Because if you don't, people have questions. If you don't speak about it, they're going to go find their answers in places that are improper. And this is a controversial thing because many people say, no, you shouldn't speak about it. You raise questions. I wrote to him that he would like, a book came out recently, I said, from Rav Tzvi Yehuda Cook, which has his lectures on it. And he says, Rav Tzvi Yehuda says something very sharp. This is in Rav Tzvi Yehuda Cook, Sichot al Emunah. He speaks about, well, tzaddikim who don't believe. Let me tell you what Tzvi Yehuda Qook says in his Sichot on Amunah from page 108 and on. He speaks about how vital it is to teach philosophical matters, theological matters, and he says many of the great rabbis can't do it. They're not equipped. So the question is, how can you, he's asked, it's a dialogue, how can it be that many Gedolim are not able, they can do Shas and Poskim, but they can't speak about philosophical matters? And it is true, I have to tell you, that I've known many great Torah scholars, and they can tell you all about Halacha and Shas and Poskim, and those, I guess, are the main things. But they can't tell you about the Rambam and the Mor Nevuchim. They can't tell you about Rav Sadia Gaon and the Ralbag. I guess it's a lack. It's a lack if they think they know about it. If they know they don't know about it, then it's not. And Rav Tzvi Yehuda replies. He says, this, the idea that even great rabbis can't speak about these matters, it's found already in the introduction of the Maseilas Yesharim, in the Chovos Levavos. That Chovos Levavos speaks about Talmid Chachamim who don't want to learn Yiras Hashem. He says the Maharal speaks about how people, great Torah scholars, don't want to learn Emunah. And he says already, Yirmiyahu HaNavi, he quotes the Pasuk, Rav Tzvi Yehuda. Here's what Jeremiah says in his prophecy. What pasuk is it? Beis Chet. It says, what does it say here? Hakohanim lo amru Hashem. The priest said, not where is the Lord? The tofsei haTorah lo yedauni. They that handle the law knew me not. What does that mean? Tofsei haTorah. That is, Torah scholars didn't know me. What does it mean, didn't know me? It means that they had simplistic beliefs. They didn't understand philosophy. They didn't understand anything in depth. And Rav Tzvi Yehuda says, this is not the reason you should mock them or anything like that. But you have to know it, the truth here, that just because someone's a great Torah scholar doesn't mean that he or she, I can say today, is equipped to deal with these matters. And then he says, why? And they ask him why? He says, because there's more prestige to know Shas and Poskim than to be involved in philosophical matters, to learn the Kuzari and the Mor Nevuchim, etc. And then he says something very strong. He says, there are tzaddikim she'enam ma'aminim. There are righteous ones who do not believe. When I say do not believe, I mean do not believe in any significant way. That is, their belief system is simplistic. Where does he get this from, Rav Tzvi Yehuda? He gets this from a Gemara. The Gemara says as follows in Sota here. It says, what is the quote? Rabbi Elazar, quotes the Pasuk, Kimi Baz Liyom Ketanot, which means he's deriving for who ponders the day of small things. And then it says, Migara Motzadikim, Sheet Babez Shochanan, Latid Lavo. What caused the table, namely the reward of the righteous to be pondered, maybe wasted in the future? What is it? World to come, he says, I guess, ketanot, mekatnut, shahaya bahen, shlo heminu b'kadosh baruch hu. That is, the small things that they didn't believe in God. Now, the translation here is wrong. It says, if you look in the translation, the black is what it's supposed to be in the text. The white is what they add. It's not true. You see ketanot, small-mindedness. It's in the text. But they make it a question. It was the small mindedness they possessed. And what is this small mindedness that did not believe in Holy One must be with a complete faith? That's not what it says. There's no question here. It's ketanot shehayah bahen, their smallness that they did not believe entirely in God. So this is from the Steinsaltz translation. It's the English. I don't know who did it, but this is definitely a mistake. The point is that we see here that the Gemara speaks about tzaddikim who didn't believe. Doesn't mean they didn't believe in the existence of God, but their understanding of God, the way they thought of God. Maybe they thought of God as a physical form. Who knows? But it's not sophisticated. Rav Tzvi Yehuda Qook said that if you don't teach Emunah, then you end up with tzaddikim and talmidei chachamim who really don't believe because their belief is like that of a child. And Rav Qook has Rav Tzvi Yehuda's father has an amazing expression. He says that the unbelief of some, heretics is more profound than the belief of believers. That is because what, and the Rav Qook explains, because you have people that they're heretics. Why? Because they're told what it means to believe. And what it means to believe is a simplistic, juvenile type of belief. So their attitude is, if this is what God is, you're telling me this is what God is, then of course I don't believe in that God. But their rejection, Rav Kook says, of belief is holier than the false belief of people who do believe, who say they believe in God, because their belief is a juvenile nothing belief. And these people, they aspire to a much higher level of belief. And that's why they can't accept the juvenile approach of certain in the religious community. So very sharp from Tzvi Yehuda. So I sent that to Rabbi Mazuz. I thought he would like that. And he replies as follows. I'm happy to see that Ratzvi Yehuda, his opinion is like mine, and that we have to speak about Amunah. And he says, that is the pshat he says in the Mishnah. What does the Mishnah say? Look in Pirkei Avos here. Rabbi Elazar Amer, Heve shakud lomod Torah, be diligent in the study of Torah, the dama shatashiv apikoris, and know how to answer an apikoris. What does one thing have to do with the other? Why are these put together? And Rav Mazuz says, this is how you have to read it. Heve shakud lomod Torah, be diligent in the study of Torah, because through this, through studying the Torah, you, in a proper way, you will know how to answer the heretic. In other words, you need to know, you need to have sophisticated understanding of Emunah. This is in opposition to the Breslovers and all these others who speak about Emunah Tmima, be a simpleton in when it comes to belief. No, you have to follow the Rambam. You have to follow Rav Sadia Gaon, Rav Yehuda Levi, that the belief has to be sophisticated. They're sophisticated works. And as I was told, I remember years ago when I was in Israel by someone, that just like when you study Perek Meruba, Bab Metzia, you have to focus and you have to look at all the shitas and everything like that. So too, when you study anything philosophical, these are great people. You need to be very sophisticated in how you're learning. Okay. Now the next one is of interest. And I got to tell you a little bit of a story here. We all know who Ibn Ezra is. We all know who the Rashbam is. Rashbam, the grandson of Rashi. He wrote a comment. We know him from the Gemara. He has a commentary on certain sections of the Gemara. He also has a commentary. He's quoted in Tosfos, but he has a commentary on the Torah. And the commentary is Al-Pi Ha-Pshat. He does things in accordance with the simple meaning, even when it contradicts the halacha. Because there's shivim punin, there's 70 faces to the Torah, and you can give an explanation of a pasuk which is in opposition to the halacha. It doesn't mean you reject the halacha, but the halacha we know through Torah Shebaal Peh. But there's other meanings. There's the pshat as well, and this is not controversial. This is accepted by everyone. You find this in Rashi. You find this in all the commentators. He has a couple of famous ones. He says al pi pshat, tefillin is not to be taken literally. So does that mean it's Torah Shabbat Peh? It needs to be investigated. But and he has some other examples. The most famous example of this is in Parshas Bereishis. The Rashbam says, now the Rashbam's commentary on Bereishis was only printed in the 19th century. The other rest of the Torah that we have, we're missing from after Perek Aleph in Bereishis up until, I think it's Lech Lecha. But we have... Chapter 1, we in fact, Hillel Novetzky has shown we even now have new manuscripts. We see to the end of Chapter 1. But in Chapter 1, he says that what is the pshat vayera vayvoker? It was evening and it was morning. He says the pshat of the pasuk is that the day begins in the morning. That's the pshat. We know that the day begins in the evening. But look at this. It was evening and then it was morning. And that's the first day. That is, when does day end? Day ends in the morning, let's say before sunrise. So, and then you start a new day and you go through the day and then you come to the end of day two. It was Erev and then it was Boker. And that's when the day ends, but the day's not ending at the end. Day's not ending in Erev. No, the day's ending in the morning. So, and then the new day begins. This idea is found in many other sources that before Matan Torah, the day did not begin in the evening. This Perush, though, was strongly attacked by the Ibn Ezra. Rav Avram Ibn Ezra, who himself, in many places, explains the Pesukim in opposition to the Halacha in accordance with Pshat, for some reason, he was very upset with this. He doesn't mention who he's attacking. He said he attacks the view, and pretty much all the scholars assume that he's referring to Ibn Rushbam, because we don't know who else he'd be referring to. And if he doesn't mention him by name, for kavod, and he says that this explanation gives strength to the heretics. Apparently, there were heretics in those days who halacha l'maisa wanted to change it, which this would mean that Shabbos would begin in the morning, not in the evening. And but fine, so he attacks it, and in his Igeres HaShabbos, he has a whole, it's a nice letter. It's like Shabbos is personified, etc. Art Scroll published a Mikros Gedolos a few years ago. And lo and behold, and they're not the first ones to do this. This funny business began about 10 years ago or 15 years ago in Israel. Someone declared that this can't be the Rashbam, because this is a heretical idea, just like Ibn Ezra says. And therefore, it was removed from a few Mikros Gedolos in Israel. And when the Art Scroll published their edition of the Mikros Gedolos, they have Rashbam on Breishis. But he discusses this in five separate places. In the first chapter, they cut out all those places, which it maybe is my most popular post ever written, because Art Scroll replied to it, and then I replied again to them. They said that Ibn Ezra has told us that this couldn't be written by Rashbam. It's not true. He doesn't say that at all. This is a passage in Rashbam that's explained by so many Achronim, including Yaakov Kamenetsky, who is Art Scroll's one of their guides. The idea that you're going to take out a passage and you can declare that Rashbam couldn't have written it. And we know he wrote it. We even know more now than we knew when I wrote my post, because we have the continuation through a manuscript. We have the continuation of his commentary. And he wasn't changing halacha. He's playing out pshat. And as I said, this is a view mentioned by a number of people, that before Matan Torah, the day began in the evening and not in the night. So if you buy the Art Scroll Mikros Gedolos Chumash on Breishis, I'm just telling you, you do not have Rashbam. That's not the only thing you have. They also took out a Rashi. Incidentally, they just deleted a Rashi, because they assume also Rashi couldn't have said it. The Rashi on Tikkun Sofrim, a section of a Rashi. Yeah. But so that's introduction to what we're talking about now, because Rabbi Mazuz, in discussing this, he says that we don't know who is the author of this commentary that Ibn Ezra is attacking. And I wrote to him, what do you mean we don't know? Everyone, I said, Mistama, you too know that the general assumption is that this is Rashbam. Do you think differently? I say to him. And he replies to me that, yes, I know what the Rashbam says, and I alluded to it elsewhere. He says, but I think, he says, that the Lubavitcher Rebbe has a different understanding of the Rashbam, but he doesn't really explain why. I think because the Lubavitcher Rebbe maybe didn't understand the Rashbam that way, he leaves it as maybe it's not the Rashbam, but he thinks it's the Rashbam. Okay, that's enough. A couple other things here until we get to the big one. I wrote to him. He writes, Rabbi Mazuz has written often about proper pronunciation of the Sadi. We spoke about that. So I wrote to him that another example is Barcelona. Barcelona is written in Hebrew, Bet Resh Sadi. Because the original pronunciation is, it's not the TS. He mentions the next thing I write to him about. He talks about how Rav Yitzhak Yaakov Weiss, the head of the Eda Charedit, Rabbi Mazuz speak about in Torah, you can't have politics. And he says, look, Rabbi Weiss from the Eda Charedit, he quotes the Yabia Omer, Rav Avad Yosef. So I write to him that it's not actually true. He quotes the Yabia Omer before he came to the Eda Charedit. Once he was the rabbi in Manchester. He was based in Manchester. Once he came to the Eda Charedit in Jerusalem, then he would never quote a Zionist. He can't. And Rabbi Mazuz replies to that politics destroys everything, as we know. Now, this you'll find interesting. Number 9. He wrote in one of his weekly Torah sheets, He quoted something from Yeshiva University. He says, this is Yeshiva University, but it could be Yeholiot that they're also Talmidei Chachamim there. So I wrote to him, what do you mean? What kind of comment is this? That it's Yeshiva, it's a university, but it could also be Talmidei Chachamim there. I said, apparently you don't know what Yeshiva University is. And I say, first of all, there are also a lot of Sephardim there, including, and there's a Sephardic Rosh Yeshiva, Rav Eliyahu Ben Chaim. And I say that Rav Avad Yosef has given shiurim there, Rav Amar has given shiurim there, and I say as follows. They should give me an award. I have no connection to Yeshiva University. I never went to Yeshiva University. I'm the only person ever to be given named a YU scholar, never having gone to Yeshiva University. In my year in Israel, I was at BMT. They picked two students from all the yeshivas. They called them YU scholars. And we had a dinner at the Holy Land Hotel. Remember the Holy Land Hotel? Incidentally, if you want to see the model of Jerusalem, it's now by the Shrine of the Book at the Israel Museum. So we had a dinner with Rav Lichtenstein, all the so-called YU scholars and all the girls from their schools. Lo and behold, afterwards, they come to speak to me at YU. I said, but I'm not going to YU. They just assumed I was going to YU, so they made me a YU scholar. And then Rabbi Blau, well, so I got to go to the dinner. And then Rabbi Blau came to Israel. He took me on a long walk trying to convince me to go to YU, which I didn't. But so I had no, other than interviewing to be the dean, believe it or not, about 10 years ago. I have no reason to praise YU because it's my alma mater or anything like that. But I say as follows. There is no doubt that the Rosh Yeshiva and Yeshivas Rabbeinu Yitzchak Elchanan are of the first rank. Who's there? Rav Schechter. We're going to see Rav Schechter in a little bit. You're going to hear something unbelievable from Rav Schechter. I say, you can disagree, but I say that he's the greatest posek in America today. And I say there's other great Rosh Yeshiva there. There's Kolels there. There's people learning. I say that 75%, I think this is correct, 75% of the rabbis, the pulpit rabbis in America, come out of YU. And then I say that Yeshiva Shir B'Zochanan is the oldest yeshiva in America. And they've had great Rosh Yeshiva. Who are they? I'm saying this, look, if you're from the Ashkenazic world, you know this. You might want to pretend that these people were not at Yeshiva College, but you know it. For a Sephardic person, someone comes from Tunis, they don't know about this sort of stuff. We're going to see later Ramai Zeus. He didn't even know Rav Soloveitchik was a great Rosh Yeshiva. He just thought he was like a thinker. You'll see what he says. Who are they? The Meitzhiter Eloi, we've spoken about him many times. Shlomo Palachek, the first one to come to America, really, to teach Torah here. He died young, I think 51 years old, from some sort of gum infection. It's because he died young that Rav Moshe Soloveitchik was brought here, and that's why Rav Joseph, J.B. Soloveitchik, was brought here. And the Meitzhiter never died. They would have remained in Europe and would have been killed, no doubt, in the war, presumably. The Meitzhiter is the famous, he's the one, remember I told you, walking, he saw the guys playing basketball or ball of some sort, and he said, why didn't they let us play ball in Europe? We would have been the same Talmid Chachamim, but we would have had a childhood. He's a Talmud Mufak of Rav Chaim Brisker, came to Volozhin at age 12, had his bar mitzvah there, and is a Tzioni, and it was a Zionist, even though his Rebbe was not. Shimon Shkop, Rav Shimon Shkop. Do you know that Rav Shimon Shkop, the great Rav Shimon? He would have stayed at Yeshiva Shir B'Zochanan, but his yeshiva in Grodno was falling apart, and the Chavetz Chaim and Rav Chaim Ozer told him he had to go back. Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, Rav J.B., Rav Yosef Dov Soloveitchik, Rav Chaim Heller, the great Rav Chaim Heller taught it, put out the Sefer Mitzvos. But then I say Rav Shaul Kassin. He passed away. Rav Shaul Kassin, who was the rabbi of the Aleppo, the Syrian community in Brooklyn, he is actually a YU graduate, Yeshiva College. He might have been the second Sephardic Musmach after Rabbi Solomon Maimon, who I mentioned. And I go on about that. And I said, when you come here, you should visit there. To which he replies, does he reply on this? No, he doesn't. He just says that I did. It's true. I saw that Rav Vad Yosef visited there. and he mentions that there's some YU guy who found 60,000 words. I don't know what book he's referring to, in other languages that go back to Hebrew. I don't know. Now we get into some bigger things, though. Can you open a refrigerator on Shabbos? We assume you can. But what do you do if the light is on by mistake? If you're one of those people who don't take it out, you leave it in. Then what can you do? Now, many people have spoken about this, and Rabbi Mazuz also wrote about it. And he thinks that if you forget to take out the light, you have to get a katan to open it. Katan below chinuch. Maybe 6 years old or something like that. And then you can't close it because then the light's going to go off. What you do is you you close it as much as you can. Maybe leave something there so it doesn't close all the way. And even you might be able to close it. Like if you just let it go, it'll just close by itself. But then you have the problem the next day. So that's what you do. I wrote to him as follows. First of all, there is a shita. There's someone named Rav Nassan. Nassan of Rome, Nathan of Rome, the author of the Aruch. I want to see right now if I can pull something up here. I have it here. Those who've been with me to Italy, you will. I think I have a picture of this. Hold on a second. I'll see quickly here. And I think those who've been to Italy will remember what I'm going to show you now. But there's an important work, the Aruch, which it's sort of, you might think it's just like a jastro, because it tells you what the words means, which is true, but it's more than that. It has all sorts of interesting perushim. And the Aruch is quoted in Tosfot, is quoted elsewhere, I believe, as well, that as saying that a psik resha do nichle. Hold on, let me just look quickly. If I want to show you a picture of something there, because I take you there on the first day, Nesan ben Nichil. I take you the very first day. If you, those who've been with me remember, it's going to be very hard. I found it. Believe it or not. Okay, I'm going to show you something now. Let me pull you up here. I can show you the picture. The very first day on my trip of Rome, I take you to we go across the river. And let me see if it describes it here. So right here on this line, you have the name Natan. It's carved in. We don't know why it's carved in. And just like there's more than one Nassan today, you have Nassan Kamenetsky, Nassan Sufkin, and a lot more. So too, I assume that in medieval Rome, there were other Nassans as well. But yet when you, the tour guy, so I like to show this because like I do in other cities, when you say Hebrew writing, maybe it belonged to a non-Jew and he found that piece there and he used it, whatever. But all the tour guides bring people there and they tell them that this is where Rav Nassan Ben Yechiel, the Aruch, lived. I just looked down here. What does it say here? This might refer to Rabbi Nathan Ben Yechiel, who lived in the late 11th and early 12th century. Even that is foolish. You have a, and what, if I take you, when I take you to Cordoba, or if we go to Cairo, when you see something in the wall that says Moshe, you're going to assume it means the Rambam, like there's no other Moshe. But this Nassan Ben Yechiel is known for one important halachic position. He holds that a psik resha lo nichale is mutter. L'chadchila. What is psik resha lo nichale? When you do an action and another action results and you don't intend it. So you do, let's say you open up a door and then maybe behind you something goes on or off, something like that. You don't intend it. Therefore, it is permissible. Tosfos disagrees. Tosfos says, rabbinically, it's still forbidden. But we know that Reb Chaim Brisker held, Reb Simcha Zel Grieger, also the Dayan of Brisk and others, they held like the Aruch, that it was permissible. So then what does this lead to? And this is what I wrote to Rabbi Mazuz. And this will be the last thing. Oh, I see it's already, we're in the middle. You haven't even got to the big one I want to talk about. But so I wrote to him that you have written and said that you have to have a katan. Listen to what Rabbi Abadi says. And we know Rabbi Abadi, we spoke a lot about this unique posek from Lakewood, who's not afraid of unusual views. If you look in his volume of response of Or Yitzhak, volume 2, number 126, number 166, it's not even a long response. And it makes perfect sense if you hold by the Aruch. He deals with the question as well. Can you, what do you do if you don't have the light on? And he says it's really simple, because assuming we hold like the Aruch, like he does, you don't want the light to come on. You wish the light wasn't on. And therefore, it's no problem. You can open up the refrigerator, even if the light goes on, and you can close it also. And it's even, and not to mention the fact that it's when you close it, obviously that's a Darabonan, but who says it's even Daraisa? But even if it is a Daraisa, he says, he gives another reason, because when you open it up, it's like Achar Yad, but he says as follows. I'll read in Hebrew. He says, I'll read in English. If you forgot to turn off the light in the refrigerator, it's an easy heter to open and close it on Shabbos. And he says that mutar kashitas ha'arach. And he thinks it's durabanan. It's only a durabanan issue here because he thinks the light is as it is. It's a durabanan, but he doesn't think it's a problem at all. Arach also refers to deraisa. He thinks safek anyway. Isra psikreshet ol nichle kuyama huraka durabanan. So you can read it. So I sent this to Rabbi Mazuz, and we will see next week what he says and what he says about the Aruch. Then I want to speak about a couple other things in this, about kashrus issues. How do you know what birds you can eat? The Torah tells us, but do you know that in Italy in the 19th century, I'm going to show you a picture, they ate like 30 different types of birds. What do we eat? 5, 6? What about pheasants? Why are we eating pheasants? Pheasants were eaten. What about all the other birds I'm going to show you? It's not that ancient history. And yet, what do we have? We got 4 or 5 different types of birds that we can eat. The Torah tells us, the Yerushalmi says, that you're going to be called to account for all the good things, all the things that you could do that you don't do. Don't try to take more things upon you. There's enough that are us, sir. You're going to be called to account for all the pleasures you could have that you didn't take advantage of. And then we'll begin... 2 more simonim from Mazuz. We'll deal with Rabbi Soloveitchik. Aseres HaDibros. What does Aseres HaDibros mean? What is the word Dibros? What is the root? What's going on there? And then Yom Tov Sheni, a couple other things. And then we'll move in, as I said, back to Rabbi Rasabi. Some new rabbis and new things. And my mother asked me when we get into the Lubavitcher Rebbe. We're on page 306. The Lubavitcher Rebbe is on page 321. We're not that far. Okay, so let me take the questions and comments. This thing about Rabbi Badi is really interesting because no other posek holds this. But you have to ask, why not? If you hold like the Aruch, as a number of people do, it would seem to be an easy case that you can't do a chachila, but if you forget to turn the light off on... they say that about hotels. If you go to a hotel, for instance, and you're in one of these places where you can't go in the hallway, the lights go on. If it's completely dark, Rabbi Mazuz actually says you have to stay in the room. But it's never completely dark. There's always lights. You can always see. So it's a situational nichale. When you go out, you walk out. You're not supposed to stay in the room. You're not stuck in the room. You don't go to a place like that. But if you end up and that's where you are, So how is that different from open? You need to get the food in the refrigerator. But Rabbi Abadi says you can close the refrigerator. Open, close. Because at the end of the day, it's a psikreshon omichale. We don't do a chachila. We want to be choshesh for Tosos's view. However, if you forgot, Rabbi Baruch Simon, who's the big Talmud from YU, the big Talmud of Rabbi Abadi, told me that he told Rabbi Abadi, don't include that responsum. It's too controversial. And it is very controversial, I think, but you have to ask yourself why it's controversial. It's, as I said, Reb Chaim held that we hold at the Aruch. And if you hold at the Aruch, it should be a simple matter that you're allowed to open it in a case like that. Okay, let's get to the questions. Comments. Susanna says, how is it not Avodah Zarah? I don't know what you're referring to, Susanna. David says, perhaps Talmud Chacham is the Hebrew translation of Sorba Merabanan. I think Sorba Merabanan is the Aramaic of probably Talmud Chacham.
I was talking about the come to my grave and I'll take care of you.
Oh, how is it not? That's a good question. I told the story I'll tell again about Rishaya from Karastir. That last time we were in Budapest 2 years ago, there was a guy there and he told me that whenever he's in Hungary, he goes and he has issues, he has problems. He goes to Rav Ishaya, and Rav Ishaya, he asks him, he gives tzedakah, and he asks Rav Ishaya to take care of him. And it's always worked. So I said to him that, well, presumably you, what you mean is that you're asking Rav Ishaya to intercede with God. And he says, no. He goes, I ask Rav Ishaya. What Rav Ishaya does, that's his business. But I ask Rav Ishaya. So that is, from a Misnagdish perspective, that is complete Avodah Zarah. You're asking, it's Dorish HaMeisim. But the Hasidim have a different perspective. And why isn't it Avodah Zarah? I think they would say that you're not praying to him. You're not saying that he's God or anything like that. You're just asking him for favors. And they'll say, how is that different from praying, asking Rachel? It says Rachel prays, but you're not supposed to request from the dead. So they also say things like, well, they're not really like the dead. That they have all sorts of things that won't satisfy you, Susanna. What can I say? But they have turned graves into... if you read the Rambam, it seems you can't even pray in a grave in a cemetery. They've turned graves into sites. Yes, it's a form. I think it is a form of Avodah Zarah, but you have to ask a chassid to explain why it's not. Sometimes they say you're not supposed to pray to the person. You're supposed to direct the prayer to the person. You're supposed to direct it to God in the merit of the person. But in Morocco, we spoke about this on the Morocco trip. It's not just a Hasidic thing. In Morocco, they would direct prayers to the saints, and they would ask the saint to take care of them. And just like the Sufis do. It's not just the Hasidim. The Moroccans, if something goes bad, they have like patron saints, Rabbi Meir or something else. It's very strange from our perspective. Jules, I have both the original Gadol and making of a Gadol, and I have what's called, I have it over there. I think he calls it the improved version or something. It's not improved. It's made worse because I shouldn't say it's made worse, but it's different. He thought that the improved version, the second edition, would not be put under the Cheirim because he took out the most controversial elements. But no, that was put under the Cheirim as well. Yes, Nelson Slifkin, when he moved into the more Dati Leumi, the Dati Leumi community, he's no longer Nelson. He's now Natan. So Baruch says the ban was on Nussan Slifkin's, but it was actually again not on Natan, different person. It wasn't on though, very cute, but it wasn't on Nussan also. It also was on the book. It wasn't on the person. But if you look in, I got to give a lot of credit both to Natan Slifkin and to Nussan Kamenetsky that both of them, include in their books, him on his website, and Nelson Kamenetsky, where is it? In his book, all the texts against them. And some of these texts, let me show you something. Some of these things are so outrageous. And he includes them, all. Personal attacks against him. Let me show you something, which I won't translate, but I think it's in the back here. And terrible stuff said about him, including from Rabbi Lefkowitz that everyone should not be near him. Okay, it's here. Here it is. I'll hold it up so you can see. I believe it's right. This was hung up in his neighborhood. At the bottom, it says, his book, Shmo Kenhu, Making of Gedolim. I'm not going to translate what it means at the bottom, but if you know modern Hebrew, you know what they're comparing the book to. And he's the Tamei. So if you read what's in the laws at the bottom, you'll see in modern Hebrew, you have Ketanim and Gedolim. He includes all the documents. So I give him a lot of credit for that. Of course, he included them because he thought it made those people look very foolish. David says, Hatach is Daniel. Yes, thank you. Mel says, how do I interpret the statement Eliyahu is Pinchas if it's not a claim that Eliyahu is a reincarnation of Pinchas? Well, there's two ways. Either it's literal or I think it's probably just the characteristics. We know that at least that's how, if you look at people like the Maharal and others, they'll interpret. I don't know if he does about this one, but that was their derech. You could say the characteristics, not the literal, but they inherit certain characteristics, things of that nature. The problem is, Mel, is that the Gemara doesn't mention anything about Gilgal. So it's hard to say that that's what they would have been having in mind. But that's what and earlier Mekubalim don't say that either, as far as I know, that that's what Eliyahu is Pinchas. They do speak about, the early Mekubalim do speak about how so-and-so is a reincarnation of so-and-so, but I don't recall any who actually say Eliyahu Pinchas, that refers to that. Maybe they do. Who does he support in the current election? Ramazuz, it'll be Netanyahu. Yeah. David says, Omer Yankelevitz is the first female Haredi MKN minister. It's like when it creates a problem because they'll say that by definition, if she's a minister and she's a woman, she can't be Haredi. It's like they had that woman, the Haredi woman who was in the Labor Party. She was also in the Knesset, if I recall, who had a dog. You might remember, David. So she came from like a Gera background. And they said the fact that she has a dog shows that she's not a Haredi, because by definition, a Haredi can't have a dog. So they're going to say that, they said about Dov Lipman, by definition, he can't be a Haredi. And I actually am sympathetic to that, because the idea, what Haredi means is you follow the Haredi leadership. And you have all these people who come out of the Haredi world, they're no longer following, they say things like, well, I am Haredi because Haredi means pious and things like that. But that's not what Haredi means. So, and since all the Haredi Gedolim have said that women can't be ministers and things like that, so Mel says, it's not a Kabbalah thing. When you sit in the sukkah, you're supposed to think about why you're doing so. Yes, okay, I take that back. You're right. But when I said a Kabbalah thing, also because you're supposed to also have a certain Kabbalistic type of kavanos also. The Kafachayim mentions that as well. But yes, you're supposed to not, it's not only, I would say it's not only a Kabbalistic thing. And what Ramazu says, that this is, I said, what's the relevance? That you know, what's the difference? Why we sit in the sukkah? Because the mitzvah sit in the sukkah. Who cares whether it's this way or that way? They, whatever way it is, we sit in the sukkah, and we could relate to both of them. But that was his answer, that because when you're sitting there, you're supposed to have a kavana, and the Shulchan Aruch tells you that the kavana is supposed to be anane kavod. Thank you. Thank you, Mel. David says the day also begins in the morning in the Beis Hamikdash. They mentioned that with the karbanos. Yes. Susanna says, we start the day at night because that's what the Babylonians did, Vayerev notwithstanding. We're assuming that the Torah tells us. So the Torah could adopt things and say that we're doing it because this is the way we did it. Rav Eli ben Amozig has no problem pointing out things that were continued pre-Torah civilizations. They were continued. He even sees this as part of the Noahide civilization. Cancel culture, yes, but that was definitely, there's the cancel culture. Jay says, right, Kelman, the day did begin in the morning. Yes, you and that's what David said. They point that out. Mel says, they're not just canceling the Rashbam, they're censoring some individual passages. I quoted in my post things from Haredim who say that this is unbelievable what's going on here. And I have a whole list of all the Gedolim who dealt with the Rashbam. And a friend of mine asked, Rav Shlomo Fisher, in Yerushalayim, who's a gadol shbegdoyim, and he was very disappointed when he was told, and he said that we do not censor our gadolim. Of course, they said we're not censoring the Rashbam. The Rashbam didn't write it, because look at the Ibn Ezra. But first of all, the Ibn Ezra doesn't say the Rashbam didn't write it. He says it's wrong. But second of all, even if the Ibn Ezra did say that, so what? So you put a note that Ibn Ezra said it. We don't... this has been in all the Mikros Gadolos. So Ezreal says, more people and rabbis followed Rav Schachter's COVID psukim than followed any other American psukim, poskim. Ah, that's interesting. I know his COVID psukim were quite well followed, especially in our minyan. It was very important, my outdoor minyan, because in one thing in particular, people were shocked. And then I showed them Rav Schachter's tshuva, and that stopped all the grumbling. We davened Ma'ariv before it was dark on Shabbos. Now, we do this all the time during the year. You can daven Ma'ariv, even if it's not dark, after a certain time, especially for a minyan. We're allowed to be, you can contradict yourself with Plag HaMincha and when you're supposed to start Mincha and Ma'ariv. But so normally Shabbos we won't, because what are you going to do? Let's say Shabbos ends at 6 o'clock. You're going to daven Ma'ariv at 5 o'clock. But technically you're allowed to. You can do it during the week. So Rav Schechter ruled that if it's on the YU Torah site, that if you can't get a minyan later, it's going to be hard. That you certainly can daven Ma'ariv earlier, just like normally you can daven Ma'ariv earlier. but you can't be Michal Shabbos, obviously, and you'd have to repeat Kriyat Shema and all that. But he says that you have to ask the local rabbi because, you know, this is a communal sort of thing. So in the minyan that I went to in the summer, we after lunch, we would come back, we daven mincha, and we daven ma'ariv, and it's light outside. But just like you could do this on a Sunday night or a Tuesday night, this is an emergency situation. You could also do it, and then you just wait till time Zman is over, and then you daven Avdallah. In other words, it's before Shkia. You can daven Ma'ariv with a minyan before Shkia. And we did that on Motzei Shabbos as well. Rabbi Kelman says that Rav Schechter tells the same ball-playing story about Rav Pershprong of Montreal, the only one who gave Haskama to a Sefer. But I think he might be confused. The story is actually the Mechitur. Jeffrey Gurak, in his book on Jews and Sports, actually mentions that in the beginning. It's the, as Mel says, yes, it's the Mechitur, and it's a famous, famous story in those days, Yeshiva College, Yeshiva Sefer Zechonim, was not uptown. It was downtown. But I think, if I'm not mistaken, the Mechitur lived in Williamsburg, and he'd come. It's the Mechitur. Chaim says it's not considered lo nichale if it's something you don't mind. In the case of the light, it would have to be something one dislikes. Well, that's not clear, Chaim. On the contrary, the sources hold that if you don't lo nichale, you don't want it. Now here, you don't want it. You do not want the light. It's the fact that it helps you, but you don't want it. So that's, for according to Rav Badi, that's what the meaning is. And others say similarly that nichale, it's like if something, you did something and then all of a sudden it caused a malacha that a very good smell. You're going to say, well, it's a very good smell. The answer is you don't want the smell right now. You don't want the smell. You don't want the light. You don't want the light because the light's usher. So that's how they read it. I understand that others might not read it that way, but that's how they read it. Now, the motion detectors, is different heterim. Rav Osner thinks that you're just walking your own way. You have to get home. You don't need to be concerned about it. But others say it's another issue. And if you're walking in the hallway, for instance, at the hotel, Rav Mazu says explicitly that if it's completely dark, you have to stay in your room the whole Shabbos. But if there's light on in the, and Rav Schechter has a shiur on it also, then you don't need it, the light. So, but if there's experts in Hilchos Shabbos, I'm hardly an expert, but that's, you can look at Rav Badi's tshuva. That's what he assumes. And by the way, this was an issue with hot water. There's a whole machlokas about hot water on Shabbos, etc. It's the same idea. You don't care what goes into the tank now. Incidentally, if a body recommends that you turn it down, so it's not yatzoletispo, and then it's not a problem at all. Common Shiner says there are two Masorah dinners. Not only are I'll speak about the Masorah dinners next class. And Rabbi Mazuz will mention the Masorah dinners because Ari Zivotofsky invited Rabbi Mazuz to the Masorah dinner. So we will see that next class. Ziv says, lo nichle, does it mean you would not want the result or you have no benefit from the result? I'm sure if you look, you'll find disputes. Generally, it's understood is that you do not want the result. Now, yes, you do have a benefit. The light goes on, you have a benefit. But you don't want it. It's usually understood that you don't want it, not that you benefit. I'm sure there are people who say that that's not the meaning, that the meaning is that you don't get any benefit. And therefore, if the light goes on, you do get benefit. There's no question you get benefit. But at least Rav Abadi holds, and many others that I've seen hold, that nichale means that you don't want it. You don't want the benefit. Let's put it that way. Baruch says Trump lost, at least officially, the last election. In 2016, a few days before the election, Jared and Ivanka went to the Ayel of the Lubavitcher Rebbe, but in 2020, only Ivanka went, not Jared, and people wondered why Trump lost. You're right. Jared did not have emunah, did not have faith. Had Jared gone also, then Pennsylvania would have gone and other things. So you're right. That's the lesson from 2020. You have to have emunah and go to the kever. Yes, David says Sfia Greenfield, the Meretz party. Yes, so she was a so-called Haredi.
Over, by the way,
the Meretz.
Purim Torah is over, finished with Purim Torah.
And finally, Naftali says the signs went up in all but in all my trips to Matersdorf, either Panimiros or Soretzkin, I never saw anyone who did not treat Rav Nosson Kamenetzi with respect as he walked through the streets or davened in shul. Not only that, if you thank you for that, Naftali, he includes in his book here, in addition to all the attacks on him, he includes a letter that was put up in the neighborhood as follows, to show you that, look, thank you, Naftali. This was put up in the neighborhood. Baruch Abba B'Shem Hashem, the people who live in the neighborhood, bless Rav Nosson Kamenetzi, Bruchim Habayim. This is when they came back from America. The Cherem was declared when he was in America. The whole issue of making of a Gadol is an example where the Haredi masses, and not just the masses, many of the rabbis, but the street, never bought into it. Publicly, they might not speak about it, but everyone knew that Rav Nosson Kamenetzi is a Talmud Chacham and he's a tzaddik. And even if you say he made a mistake, he doesn't deserve to be totally destroyed like this. And the people who wrote the letter, other than one of them, Rabbi Shiner, none of them could even understand English, and he wasn't given a chance to defend himself. In here, he has a letter. He includes the letter. I think he includes it. I have it from Rabbi Zelig Epstein from America. I think it's in here, which he wrote the facts. He wrote to Rav Yashav saying, what's going on here? Everything Rav Nosson said is correct. Unfortunately, it was a big loss. He didn't write anymore. I'll end with this. Rav Nosson Kamenetzi did not write anymore. I got him. He wrote to me and I put it on the Sfarim blog, and then he wrote a short piece. I got him to write something for the Sfarim blog, but he planned on doing more, and he was totally disillusioned, and he worked. You can read the introduction where he speaks to make Anatomy of a Ban what a book is. When someone writes a book, it's part of them, and to have it destroyed like this, and he no longer had any motivation. And he didn't speak. In the year of the ban, he spoke. You can go to YU Torah and hear him. And then he was quiet for a while. But shortly before his death, you can also see this is in Hebrew. A group of open-minded Haredim, they have like a seminar of sorts. You can see him on YouTube, and he gives a whole talk to these. And these are Haredim in the Levush and everything. And he explains his approach. And it's really unfortunate. And I got to know him, and as I said, I'm going to have the essay. Not only did I get to know him, I was the first one. I remember when the Cherem first came out, and everyone was saying, no, it can't be, it's not true. Of course, they always say it's not true, and it almost always is true. I'm the one who called him, and I got his phone number, and I called him in California, and I was the first one, and he told the information to, and then I put it online, the details about the Cherem, and then became friends, and one day maybe I'll publish some of his letters to me and some of his emails to me. Okay, with that, we've gone far enough. Oh, quickly, just four new messages, and then we'll give it to Rabbi Mordechai Breuer. Wrote historical critique in Hamayan. Yes, well, I wrote the first critique. The first review of Kamenetzi's book is mine, and it was not a pleasant. I was not happy with this book, and he wrote to me. First I was banned and then I was panned. To me, he says, first I was banned and now I've been banned. But this is not history, but there's a lot of great stuff. But then Breuer wrote something about it. And then someone else wrote it. And he has notes. I'm sure he has notes with his children. I think he must have notes on other stuff. I also published the letter from Yaakov Kamenetzi to his son of Nosson Kamenetzi, which I discovered. Nosson Kamenetzi had, I believe he lost his copy. He made a copy and he gave it to Rabbi Charap at YU. Rabbi Charap didn't know what to do with it. He stuck in the archives at YU. I found it looking through the archives. Nosson Kamenetzi had totally forgotten about this. I showed it to him. I didn't know who it was, which son it was. He said, it's him. And that's the letter. You can find it online, in which Rav Yaakov says that the reason he was asked by Dr. Belkin to teach at YU, but he can't, because then his sons would want to know, well, if you're teaching there, then why isn't it good enough for us? And he didn't want to send his sons to YU, but he thought that it's important because it's the largest yeshiva and it would have the most influence. So you see that that's, I think, an interesting letter. And the last question is, David says, Rav Nosson Kamenetzi said he had completed his research for all the subsequent volumes and his notes are in his study. What that means, I have no idea, because the children will not ever put out. He was fortunate that his children had all been married when this came out. So I just hope that maybe they'll take my advice and put it away. And maybe in 25 years, 100 years after we're gone, someone can use it, because they're not going, this has not been forgotten, and they're not going to let it out. I can tell you that. Okay, we've gone long enough. Rabbi Kelman.
We have. Okay, thank you.